Hello, and welcome to our series, Career Resilience, where we talk with people about their career path and their career journey, and maybe we can all learn from each other. My name is Jan Daniluk, and I'm a human resources professional in London, Ontario, Canada. I work with Ford Keast LLP, and I work with my clients to help them with the HR side of their business. We hope that you will enjoy these discussions with real people about real challenges and real working life situations. Welcome. My guest today is Maria Mealy. Welcome, Maria.
Hi, Jan. How are you doing?
I'm so glad to see you.
Yes, and here.
We have a bunch of stuff to talk about today, and I've got my questions all listed out because I'm really interested in what you do for a living and some of the changes that you've made in your life. So we're going to talk about career. We're going to talk a bit about immigration and where you've ended up.
Sure.
And also, of course, we're going to talk about what we always talk about on this podcast video series about career resilience and your thoughts around that. So can we start out, Maria, with what you do?
Yes, absolutely. So I am essentially a headhunter, a recruiter, and I focus only within a very specialized area of public accounting, which is mid-tier firms. So I recruit people in taxation and audit for mid-sized accounting firms within Ontario as well as New York City, most recently.
Okay. So I think what I'd like to do is backtrack because I definitely can hear an accent. So I don't think you're in New York City right now, right?
I am, correct. I am in New York City at the moment.
Okay, and that's where you're settling?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, I am. So can we go back to how you got to New York City?
Absolutely. And I'm sorry if my emails are coming in. I do apologize. You could probably hear some sounds. But I started off my career in Toronto, and I was there for about 6 years. My husband, now husband, and I moved to Toronto from Ireland in 2013. And I always wanted to get into recruitment. I had previously completed a master's in human resources and industrial relations back in Ireland. And I decided I wanted to move into that space permanently after my education in Toronto. So I had started my career working in HR office of Mount Sinai Hospital. Then I moved into agency recruitment, which is like the large agencies, like the big agencies you would have heard of. And I was there for several years. And throughout the time that I spent within agency recruitment, I built up great relationships within the candidate space, within clients. And I felt like I wanted to push that further. I wanted to drill down into the candidate and client relationships. I felt that there was a lot of feedback coming to me from clients and candidates about how the recruitment experience could be a lot more personal, less transactional, a lot more consultative. The time that I had given a lot of clients and candidates in the past was something that they felt was really desperately missing from recruitment in Ontario. So I then felt it was time for me to perhaps make a move and go out on my own.
Okay, so let's stop there. I want to backtrack to the fact that you're living in New York City. Yes. What is it like to live in New York? Because you've lived in a few places now. What's New York City like? Because I know if you make it there, you can make it anywhere.
This is true. This is absolutely true because, you know, my husband and I decided to move to New York for so many reasons. One is that it has an energy and it has a huge amount of opportunity. We had some family here. But the city itself is, I would say pre-COVID, Jan, I'll give you an insight into what it was like because it's very different now. So pre-COVID, it is just such a massive network. You know, you have to go out and network. You have to go to events. You have to speak with people. You have to get your name out there. And you really have to put in the time talking with people, sending messages, sending emails to try and meet for coffee. And that is really how you build up a network. And for me, starting a business, you know, in Toronto, it was difficult, but I had a foundation of people I knew. Mm-hmm. So coming to a new city, starting from scratch, particularly in New York, which is overwhelming, it can be daunting for some people. I felt it to be tough, but exciting. And it's that kind of energy that I feed off of. Mm-hmm. So post-COVID, or like in the middle of COVID now, New York is very different because the majority of people have left to go back to their family homes. The city is very quiet. But what I love about living in New York is that it's such a melting pot. It's incredibly diverse. There's a huge history here. Mm-hmm. And I think if you have the attitude, the positive attitude, that Americans really seem to gravitate towards, you can do anything. It's really a mindset that you have to have. Mm-hmm. And I felt that was something I liked being around.
Is it buzzier than Toronto?
I would say so. Yeah, I would say so, definitely. In a different way, Jan, I would say Toronto felt very homely to me. You know, I had built, both of us, my husband and I had built a very happy life there, very comfortable. But I think, you know, we were at a stage where we wanted to push ourselves out of our comfort zone. New York, it's almost a point of you have to always be going. It's like, you know, a shark. If you don't keep moving, you die. And that is really, you know, the analogy that I take with me when we came to the city, is that you have to continually work. But it's that buzz, the energy that you get from doing that, that I really love.
Okay. So we have positioned you as a sole proprietor of a recruitment firm. Yes. And the name of your firm is?
Theory Y Search.
And why did you name it Theory Y Search?
Well, Theory Y comes from an HR management theory. There's Theory X and there's Theory Y. And I stumbled upon this during my master's studies. So Theory X is when a manager treats their staff as, you know, being disposable and not being inherently motivated to do a good job, having to be micromanaged. And then Theory Y sees a manager treats their staff as something that is much more holistic, that they, you know, take enjoyment out of it, doing a great job for, you know, their clients, wanting to be part of a team, wanting to give more back, and not feeling like you have to micromanage your staff. Whereas, you know, you hire a great person and you let them do their job. And so that's really where I felt, you know, the Theory Y could be applied to recruitment, you know, where as you employ someone like myself to find you great people, or you find a person through me that is just, you know, a solid, stellar person to have on your team, and you can just let them do their job.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said yourself that you're a headhunter. Mm-hmm. What do you think are some of the misconceptions that people have about that word and that role?
Mm-hmm. Well, for many years that I've been working in recruitment, a lot of people are still unsure about what my role is. I think a lot of people are, candidates particularly, can be confused. Do they pay a fee to the recruiter for finding them a job? And I would say no, never. Another misconception is that, you know, for me, that I just post jobs online and wait for lots of applications to come in for positions that I'm working on. That's also not the case. For me, a lot of my work is referral based. So candidates who I work with are referred to me through word of mouth. And a lot of my work is relationship building, basically acting as a counselor most of the time for candidates, figuring out what makes sense for them strategically in their career, what would make sense for them going forward, and also being a partner and advisor to firms that I work with on the client side. Mm-hmm. So misconceptions really is that a recruiter is a transactional middleman, you know, basically just taking a CV and trying to put in, you know, a square peg in a round hole. Whereas for me, I really look at the bigger picture. I look at a person's personality, their culture fit, and, you know, where they could be of best benefit long term.
Do you reach into organizations?
And do I reach into?
Do you reach into organizations and pluck people out?
Oh, well, when I think about, you know, any candidates I work with in, like, now and in the past, a lot of those people I have met probably within, you know, networking events or Canadian Tax Foundation events. Generally, I don't poach anybody. I don't go to organizations and pull them out of firms. A lot of the time, people I've met with have said to me, look, Maria, I'm looking for a position that will give me XYZ. I want to get here in my career. And then really, I just, you know, speak with them and say, this is what I'm working on. How do you feel about it? What do you think you'll be able to gain out of this position, and go from there? It's never an aggressive poaching process ever.
Have you ever been in a situation where a little bit more aggressive poaching would be expected?
Yes, I would say with really tough to fill roles, some firms will come to me and say, look, we have a need for a unicorn, somebody who has this level of experience, these type of clients. And at that point, I would have to, you know, ramp up my search, you know, have different types of ways of accessing candidates. At that point, yes, but I don't see it really as poaching. I would see it as, you know, approaching a candidate with an opportunity that might give them, you know, exactly what they're looking for, Jen.
That makes sense. How do you deal with rejection? I mean, you're such this nice person, and I would just feel terrible rejecting you about anything, Maria. So, but you must in your business get rejection. So how do you deal with it?
Thank you, Jan. Well, a thick skin. When I started off, you know, working in recruitment, it was so daunting and scary getting on the phone, talking to people, because you would get a lot of rude people on the phone. You would get a lot of hang-ups. You would get a lot of expletives. And I think you just have to not take it personally. Never take anything in business personally. It's always, you know, a business transaction when you're talking with a client. If they are having a bad day, don't, you know, assume that it's your fault. I have just built up a thick skin over the years. And I think if you approach people with positivity and you have a genuine conversation with people and you try and probe people to see, you know, what makes them tick, mm-hmm. majority of the time, you know, somebody who you get on the phone, be it a partner or HR director or office manager, they will reciprocate. And that's truly where I find I can differentiate myself, because a lot of other agencies out there, they have many people on the phones consistently calling up with the same script, trying to get in touch with somebody. And I think a lot of people are put off by that approach. For me, I like to just converse and try and connect.
Yeah. What have you found have been the big challenges about being every position in your firm? Because you are it, right?
Yes. Yeah. I think the main challenge is, you know, never really having downtime. I don't really get a chance to have a vacation. You know, I can get away. Obviously, I can spend time with my family, but I'm always on the phone. You know, there's an example where my husband and I went to the Rocky Mountains. We went to Jasper to see the glacier, and I was on a payphone at the glacier speaking with a client, trying to, you know, confirm a start date with a candidate. So there's always an expectation that I'll be on, that I'll be accessible, and I have to be, because I don't have anyone to delegate to. So I think that would be the main challenge, you know, not having any boundary between personal and professional. You know, the time that I spend in work is pretty consistently all the time.
Yeah. I had a great interview with Terry Zavitz, which I hope that you will give a listen to if you haven't already. And one of the things that we talk about in that episode is a bunch of her suggestions for entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. And one of her comments is, and there is no such thing as a 40-hour work week when you're an entrepreneur.
No.
You have to accept that work-life balance is not going to be the same for you as it might be for somebody within an organization.
Absolutely. And I sometimes say to my friends and families that I went from a 9-to-5 to a 24/7 through my own choice. Through choice. I wanted to do that.
So Maria, how do you stay energetic? How are you able to cope with that kind of schedule?
I would say, you know, with anything, I think having people, strong, supportive people around you is so huge. It's very important. Surrounding yourself with the right types of support network. So my husband is excellent. I do call him my director of strategy operations, because I can bounce off of him anything that I need, you know, discussing or need to brainstorm mm-hmm. through. So having somebody you can bounce off of and talk to about your concerns or how tired you are, or even just asking someone, can you make me a cup of coffee? So that would be number one. Number two is I have to schedule everything, Jan. So I have to, you know, in the morning time, you know, figure out, okay, I'll do my workout from 6 a.m. to 7 a.m. I will, you know, start my business development from this hour. I'll take my lunch break here. So a tight schedule really helps for me. Mm-hmm. And then I would say, you know, trying to shut yourself off and partition your life from, say, 7 p.m. onwards. I try and say to my husband, you know, look, I'm going to take some time off. We'll have our dinner. I'll put my phone away, shut down the laptop. At least try, you know, attempt to have, yes. you know, a boundary. I know it's so difficult with COVID where everything is blurred at the moment.
Yes.
But, you know, at least attempting in having these boundaries does help. And I've taken up knitting. So that's also quite relaxing. I'm knitting during the pandemic.
What time of day are you doing knitting?
I would say maybe 9 to 9:30.
9 to 9:30.
9 to 9:30 before bedtime. As you can tell, there's a schedule for that as well.
Yeah, scheduling in your hobby. That's going to be interesting.
Window.
When you look at your career and what you've built, what's the thing, as you look back and having brought yourself to being a business owner, what's the thing you're the most proud of about you?
I would say taking a leap from being an employee to being my own boss, to being self-employed. I'm extremely proud of making that, taking the first step, making that leap, and then continuing that journey for the last 3 years. Because I've just, you know, entered my third financial year being self-employed, running my own business. So I'm extremely proud of, you know, taking a very scary step in my life and leaving everything I knew behind, and then making a move into being self-employed, into entrepreneurship.
Yeah. And during that period of time, you said you're on your third year. How long before business sort of started to build for you?
I would say immediately. Really, I would say that a lot of the relationships I had built up in Ontario stood to me. Mm-hmm. A lot of people remembered the time and the effort and the care that I put into working relationships, professional relationships, past success that I had really stuck to me. So anybody who I reached out to, I had a lot of goodwill. A lot of people were very eager and happy to continue to work with me.
Yeah.
So there was never a lull. You know, I gave myself some time from leaving my full-time job to, you know, getting things sorted for me and starting my business. But there was never a period of time, thankfully, and I feel extremely grateful for this, that I had to try and build things back up again. I really felt that it kind of took off from the get-go. Mm-hmm. And I would put that down to just consistency over 5 years before moving out on my own, just really building up those relationships, following up with people, keeping in contact, sending a message to somebody on their birthday, sending a message to somebody on their work anniversary, sending out Christmas cards, gift cards, you know, during the holidays. Mm-hmm. All of those things are really remembered.
Yes. Yeah. Good for you. I think that's an incredibly brave move. And so the question I wanted to ask you, though, is about stress and how you react to stress. You seem like such a calm person.
Mm-hmm. I think with stress, you have to talk about it. You have to find your person that you can feel completely honest with. Mm-hmm. You have to allow yourself to feel the stress, Jan, as well. You know, rather than saying, no, I'm okay, let's keep trucking on. Mm-hmm. I think allow yourself the time to feel your emotions and kind of ask yourself, where is this coming from? You know, kind of step into it, allow it to kind of wash over you. Mm-hmm. Make steps in your head to alleviate any stressful symptoms you may have, and have outlets, you know, have the outlets that make you feel outside of work, that make you bring you joy, essentially. Mm-hmm. So I try to incorporate that as much as possible when I started the business. Mm-hmm. I did find it very difficult going from an office environment where you are surrounded by people, you know, all the time, that you have friends and you have distractions. So on one hand, I found it quite lonely going from an office to working on my own, completely on my own. But after a time, that stress of the loneliness kind of dissipated, and I realized that I could actually get into a space of more focus. Mm-hmm. And I felt a lot more deeply connected to the work I was doing, rather than being distracted or going over to the kitchen and making a cup of coffee and chatting with people for 45 minutes. I felt like I was absolutely more in my zone. Mm-hmm. So in terms of stress, I felt that, you know, you talk about it, you feel it, and then you try and incorporate things into your life that alleviate it.
Yeah. Yeah. But you also strike me as the kind of person who errs on the positive side.
Truly. Yes. I try to. Must be my Irish upbringing. I think a lot of Irish people are just, you know, their attitude is really, you know, it could be worse. Sure, it could be worse. So I think I really resonates with me where we have that type of mindset where, you know, a lot of people have a lot more hardship, and I just kind of keep on moving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I have to say that I'm one of those people that followed you into this business that you're in. And what I appreciate about working with you, Maria, is just, you're just such a human. And I guess that's what you're saying about, you know, it's about people, not about transactions. And, you know, you and I have had some great conversations and some great discussions and some interesting things about candidates. And, you know, we've settled candidates together that I just love to watch them grow and develop. And you know, you must feel, as I certainly do, as when I do my recruiting and so on, very proud of your people.
Absolutely. It's so rewarding, Jan. I think, you know, one of the reasons why I love what I do, because recruitment has a very high burnout rate. You know, you see a lot of people get into it and leave after a year or two. But what I love about this job is that it's so rewarding. You meet people at the start of their career. You work with them. You present them with a great opportunity. The firm is happy. They're happy. And then 5-6 years later, their tax partner or, you know, their senior manager. And, you know, they've just gone above and beyond your expectations. Mm-hmm. And when you present somebody with a job that can truly change their life, that's the rewarding part for me. Mm-hmm. I find it to be the best job in the world. If you are suited to it and you don't mind working a lot, you don't mind working all the time, then, you know, it is the most satisfying, rewarding job because you are tangibly changing somebody's circumstances.
To your point about calling your business theory why, I really love that.
Thanks, Jan.
Let's transition into career resilience. And when do you feel you've had to be the most resilient in your career?
I would say when things go wrong, when, you know, a candidate you think is perfect for a job doesn't take the job, or the job disappears, or the client has a change of mind, or just things don't work out. Things just kind of disintegrate. It's very demoralizing sometimes because you can put in a massive amount of work, a massive amount of man hours into trying to match everything correctly, because it is like matchmaking. And so when things don't go right and you have to start from scratch, that can be quite tough and that can be quite trying. Mm-hmm. And especially when you are employed by yourself, you know, you do not get paid if you do not work. So, you know, for me, when things don't go right, it is really the difference between a pay, like getting paid for that month and not getting paid. So that can add to your stress. So that type of resilience, I feel, is something that I've had to work on. Also starting starting a business when I've had no background as in business or being an entrepreneur, nobody in my family really is. Mm-hmm. That resilience was really something I had to work on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now you specifically wanted to talk about imposter syndrome. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's very interesting. Can you start with a definition, your definition of imposter syndrome, and give me some of your thoughts on why you chose that as a career resilience topic?
Yeah. So I found, and even within myself and with candidates that I speak with as well on a daily basis, a lot of people feel that they are not worthy of success, or they feel like they're not capable of making massive moves in their career, or anything that they have come across that is positive or successful in their journey is through luck, or that they're a fraud. And that is something I kind of had to battle when I started my business. Not the fact that I was fraudulent in any sense, but just the fact that I was coming from an employee for so many years. I had never worked for myself. It was such a big move to go out on my own. There were these voices that you sometimes have in your head where it's, you know, who do you think you are? Or do you really think you're capable of making such a big move on your own? You know, why would you do this when you don't have many more years of experience? Don't you have to have a bigger brand behind you? All of these things that you kind of come across. And I felt that, you know, in the first few months of starting the business, those were the feelings I was battling.
That would be difficult. And so how did you battle your way through them?
So there was a few things I felt helped, Jan. One was that I wrote everything down. So I went through notebooks of, you know, just internal monologues that I had with myself. And then I distinguished, is this a feeling or is it fact? Mm. And honestly, there was columns that I had where I was writing down feelings, and then I was trying to parse them into the fact column. and they weren't parsing. You know, there was nothing that I could say that I was feeling that was actually true. So that was the first step, where I was writing everything down, making sure I was recording what was going on in my head. Because if you don't get it out of your brain and onto paper, you will stress yourself out. You will talk yourself out of everything. And you will go round and round in your head for months and not make any decision. So I decided I wanted to write everything down, and I separated it from fact and fiction. And another thing I felt worked was looking at past successes, looking at feedback from candidates or clients that I had over the past few years, keeping a feedback journal or a folder of everybody's positive thing, everybody's positive comments, or any feedback that I had from people that was really great. I kept that to hand, any recommendations that I had. And also, I felt that you can really start like breaking down negative emotions about yourself, trying to almost do, you know, an inventory on why are you feeling this way? You know, where is this coming from? Is this something that is based on, you know, your own perception of yourself? Has someone ever said this to you? And why do you believe it to be true? So that was the kind of system that I worked through. Yes. And on a very practical level, I was also just looking at, you know, how can I shift my work, the processes of me working into something where I could like have a very set account of deliverables, something I wanted to start during the week, at the start of the week. And then at the end of the week, I'd said, okay, let's look, have a retrospective of all the work that I've done and the successes that I've had during the week. So I broke things down into manageable chunks.
Yes.
And rather than getting overwhelmed and like talking myself out of things or feeling that like something was too massive to deal with, I broke it down into weekly segments. And then I looked at the things that I have achieved over the week. And then I went from there. So tackling small problems, breaking everything down, writing everything down, and then like just working through the feelings from there.
I really like the idea that you did that columns where is this a feeling or is this a fact? I think that's really quite amazing. You know, I do believe, Maria, we all go through this. And I remember years ago when I was going through a particularly difficult time at work, and so it was really difficult to the point that I thought, I'm not sure I can continue working. And then I thought, what do people see when they look at me? So this is sort of the direction I went. What do they see? And what they probably saw was someone who was calm, professional, dressed for the job,
all
those things. And I thought, well, if that's what they see, why don't I just start seeing that too?
Exactly.
And that sort of helped me sort of adapt to that imposter syndrome that you're talking about.
Become the person you want. Like my husband said it to me, you know, allow yourself to be the winner in your own life. Become the person that others see you to be. Believe that. And I actually clicked in my head. I was like, yes, like as you said, Jan, you know, people see me to be a certain way. You've mentioned already on this meeting, you know, Maria, you seem very calm and you're super positive. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it comes from years of having to work through the negative side that's kind of talking you out of things and just muting that voice as much as possible.
Yeah, and that voice is willing to be so loud.
Yes. And it's a very aggressive roommate in your brain.
And it's not the roommate you want.
No.
And that roommate will sometimes, you know, especially I find if I'm going to sleep at night, the roommate will come in and say, you know what, I think you should really start worrying about whatever. It doesn't pick a topic.
Can you imagine if that was a real person, Jan? You would tell them where to go. You'd be like, get out of here. Can you imagine if that was a real human person going, Jan, you know, I think you should start really worrying about A, B, and C.
I know.
I don't want to hear it.
I know. And that's my whole point too, of being your own best friend if you possibly can. But I think that is such great advice and really helpful, Maria, for you to come out and to sort of talk about that, because lots of times we don't want people to know that this is how we're feeling. And, you know, it's nice to share those feelings because all of us have the same path to be on. If you were talking to a candidate and you were giving that candidate a couple of pieces of advice because they were switching careers or whatever, what would those pieces of advice be to a candidate?
The first thing I always say to people is, you know, when I have a person who's going for interview and I'm preparing them and coaching them, I always ask them, you know, try and connect with the person you're meeting on a human level. See if you can connect with this person. You can see yourself working with this person for many years to come. Do you have that type of energy between you? Do you feel like you can have a conversation? So one of the first things I say to a person is, you know, approach this as a conversation, somebody you're meeting in your community, mm-hmm. somebody you can learn a great deal from, they can learn a great deal from you, that you're just meeting as two professionals having a conversation about what you do. Mm-hmm. And I think that immediately takes this kind of panel-esque transactional feeling away from interviews. Somebody then can go in and feel comfortable saying, I am, you know, coming from this level of experience, I'm meeting somebody who has a great deal to teach me. I can hopefully teach them something about my journey. And those things, you know, saying that to a person really just lifts the stress off of interviewing because mm-hmm. it can be a really pressurized environment. Yes. So I always want to make somebody feel very comfortable and tell them, you know, go into this, approach it in a completely different way. Mm-hmm. I don't think any recruiter that I've ever known in this space has approached interviews, you know, the same kind of holistic approach. And that's really what I like to do. Mm-hmm. The second thing would be, you know, to really know what you're looking for. Mm-hmm. Have you thought about where you want to be in your career in the next 10 years? Do you know what type of goals you want to reach for yourself professionally in the next 5 years? And that's one of the things I have, you know, I go over when I have my first conversations with candidates is let's talk about who you are and where you want to go. Does this make sense for this firm? Does this opportunity serve you? Does it give you the type of experience you're looking for? Yes. So I would always say to a candidate, know exactly who you are and what you're looking for. And let's talk about that. And once you actually talk about that with the candidate before an interview setting, you know, it kind of crystallizes things in their mind. You know, they have a clearer sense of what they're looking for rather than just kind of floating into an interview, not really being prepared, not really being sure about what they want. And an interviewer can pick up on that, Dan. I'm sure you have, you know, in the past.
Mm-hmm. I like that idea of facilitating that thought process with the candidate, because I think it is always difficult, very difficult to be the person who's looking for a job or who's thinking to make a change, because it's a vulnerable place to be. Mm-hmm. And I think it's one of the toughest things in life, actually, is switching jobs, considering a job, all those things, because you're putting yourself on the line. So having someone like you to chat it over with, is really nice to have that conversation. And it's totally different from a conversation that you would have with your spouse or your best friend who would say, you know what, just go in there and just show them what you can do. That's what we usually hear. Whereas if you really think about it, it's so much more than that. And I think that's what you facilitate with candidates. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that you want to share from your journey with us?
I would say, you know, if you're ever in the space in your life where you're thinking, should I make a big move? Should I change jobs? Should I start a business? Should I, you know, move country, whatever it may be? I would say, you know, take the leap and say you can do it, figure out how to afterwards. It's a Richard Branson quote where he said, you know, if anyone gives you an opportunity, say yes and learn how to do it after the fact. Just say yes and take that jump and make that leap. Because if you procrastinate and you give yourself a year and you say, I will do it when I have a certain amount of money in the bank, or I'll do it when I have more years of experience, you know, it'll never get done. And we've seen from COVID and what's happened with Corona in the last year, Jan, is that, you know, life has other plans. You know, you can't really wait around for these things. I think you should just, you know, make your move and, you know, give it the best you can and don't get in your own way. That's something I have been, you know, proselytizing to every single person that I come across, women in particular. You know, I'm part of this group called CEO that was started in Toronto by Vicky Saunders. And it's about, you know, giving back and investing into female-led ventures. And I went to a great meeting in 2018 before I started my business. And it was all of these women who had these great business ideas, and they were meeting at Toronto City Hall to talk about, you know, the future of female-led businesses. And I just thought it was so inspiring. And so I had that feeling and that kind of fire lit within me. And so I want to share that with everybody, where if you feel like you are ready and you want to work for yourself and you think you can do things better, that would be a key thing. If you can offer something that is better, that is what is on the market at the moment, do it.
Yeah. For it. Yeah. Oh, that's great. Thank you for chatting with me today, Maria.
It's such a pleasure.
Always a pleasure to chat with you. To our viewers and listeners, thank you very much for joining Maria and me today. We really appreciate it. You can find us on wherever you get your podcast, and we're also on YouTube. So I hope you will look us up, and please subscribe. And until we meet again, thank you very much.